Charming didn't respond.
"Hello?" he said loudly.
He stepped up to a long reception desk and leaned over it.
"Hello?"
Just then, Sabrina heard a loud bell, and an elevator door opened behind them. A chubby Asian man wearing a Hawaiian shirt stepped out. His face was tanned, and his eyes were lined with crow's feet. A big grin filled the man's face, and he hugged Charming.
"Boss! I knew you'd come back to rescue me. Where have you been?"
"I've been out of town, Harry," Charming said, pulling himself away from the man and fussily straightening his clothes. "These are Relda Grimm's granddaughters." Harry clapped his hands.
"Aloha," he said. "Welcome to the Hotel of Wonders. I'm your host, Harry. Checking in?"
"I'm afraid not," Charming said. "I've just come for a few things in my room."
"Right away, sir," Harry said.
He raced around the reception desk and opened a drawer containing a collection of old-fashioned hotel keys, each attached to a bright red keychain with a number printed on its front.
"You own a magic mirror?" Sabrina said.
"There is more than one child," Charming said.
"There is?"
Daphne wondered. "Mirror never told us that."
"Found it," Harry said, as he came around the desk and gestured for the group to follow him.
They stepped into an elevator, and Harry pushed a button that read, "Penthouse." The elevator had glass walls, allowing the girls to look out on the beach as they rose into the sky.
"Boss, you have to get me out of here," Harry continued. "Every day, Hart gets dressed in front of me. A mirror can only take so much."
"You'll be leaving with us," Charming said.
"Very good, sir. It's good to have you back."
"It's good to be back." Harry turned to the girls.
"So, I heard you mention you have a mirror of your own?"
Sabrina nodded.
"Yes, his name is Mirror."
Interesting. Odd that he doesn't have a name," Harry replied. "Must have been one of the earlier models."
"Their mirror was originally the Wicked Queen's personal mirror," Charming explained.
"Ah, that explains it. The prototype,"
Harry said when the elevator stopped and the doors opened.
"I'm confused," Daphne said. "How many magic mirrors are there?"
Harry led them down a hallway decorated with beautiful paintings.
"Oh, that's hard to say. The Wicked Queen made all the magic mirrors. She would create mirrors like this one to fill the particular needs of her customers. She called us the deluxe packages. There are mirrors that are deserted islands, ski resorts, and even one that looks like a Polish restaurant in Cleveland, Ohio."
Charming shrugged. "Everyone has their own taste."
"The prince needed a retreat, a place where he could get away and relax. So, naturally, the Hotel of Wonders was perfect for him," Harry said proudly. "It's a full-service luxury hotel fit for a prince."
Daphne looked up at Charming.
"I always wondered how you stayed so tanned."
"Masters can choose to give their mirrors names. I suppose your mirror didn't get a name because the Wicked Queen didn't feel it was necessary," Harry explained. "She was never big on personalization. Oh, here we are."
They stopped at a door with a bronze plaque that read, "The Royal Suite." Harry inserted the key into the lock and let the group inside. It was a beautiful room with a king-size bed and satin sheets. There was an enormous jacuzzi and a fireplace in the bathroom, and in an adjoining room a few chairs surrounded an oak bar. Harry opened two double doors, revealing a walk-in closet filled with expensive suits and shoes, and many drawers and small nooks. Charming selected a long white jacket, which he laid on the bed. Then he picked out a clean black suit, some socks and shoes, and a tie. He lay these on the inside lining of the jacket, and they magically sank into it and disappeared.
"Cool! I want one," Daphne said.
Charming nodded. "It's called the Hungry Jacket. It acts like a locker until I want things. Then I just reach in and take them."
"It would come in real handy when we get the secret weapon," Daphne said.
Sabrina flashed the little girl an angry look.
"What secret weapon?"
the former mayor asked. Daphne looked around and whistled innocently.
"What secret weapon?"
Sabrina knew there was no use hiding it any longer.
"Show him." Daphne took the necklace out of her shirt and showed Charming the key. Sheriff Hampstead gave it to us. He said it unlocked a safety deposit box that held a secret weapon we could use in case Mr. Canis lost control of the wolf. We're not supposed to get it unless he does, and we're not supposed to tell anyone that we have it. Charming held the key in his hand for a moment, then gave it back to the girl. Interesting, he murmured.
Everything in order, boss? Harry said. I had the cap of wisdom cleaned, but those rust stains on the sword of sharpness are impossible.
I won't be taking those, Harry, Charming said.
He laid some more clothes in the center of the jacket and pulled the four corners together. Then he dropped two of the corners and shook it out. The clothing was gone.
But I'll be needing the magic detector.
Harry nodded and rushed to a drawer across the room. From inside it, he removed a small black ball, no bigger than a marble. It was identical to the one Sabrina had seen the future Daphne use. Charming took it from Harry and handed it to Daphne. The little girl marveled at it for a minute.
I feel funny, she said, like I'm vibrating.
And then she did just that.
It was disturbing to see the little girl shaking so hard. Sabrina wondered if it hurt.
You're detecting magic, Charming said. That should help you find the missing magic items.
This town is filled with magic items, Sabrina said. How do we narrow it down?
Daphne will feel things of great power automatically, Charming explained. But if she concentrates, it will lead her to specific objects. You're going to have to practice. Now let's go. I've got to get you home before you're missed.
No time for a break, boss. The spa's offering hot stone massages, Harry said, as he closed the doors of the closet.
Not today, Harry, Charming replied.
Harry led them out of the room, down the elevator, and into the lobby, where they found the portal that would take them back into the real world. Sabrina looked through it. Nottingham was gone, and the mayor was sound asleep.
I think the coast is clear, she told the others.
Good luck, folks, Harry said. It was a pleasure having you here in the hotel. Perhaps you two could come for a longer stay sometime.
Charming flashed Harry a warning look.
Or maybe not, Harry said.
Well, aloha, and happy surfing.
Charming was the first to step through the portal. Sabrina and Daphne followed, and the sounds of surf immediately disappeared, replaced with Hart's heavy snoring. Charming gestured for the girls to be still, then draped the white jacket over the mirror. When he pulled the garment away, the mirror was gone, just as the clothing had vanished.
Nice trick, Sabrina whispered.
With the jacket over his arm, Charming crossed the room and carefully opened the door. He craned his neck to look into the hallway, and then gestured for the others to follow. Soon they were directly in front of the fireplace.
I'll go first, Sabrina said,
crawling into the fireplace. She searched the space for the rope, but couldn't find it.
The rope is gone, she whispered, climbing out quickly.
Of course it's gone,
a voice said from the darkness. The group spun around, but all they could see was a dark figure lurking in the shadows.
I can't just let people break in and out of the mayor's house whenever they want.
Charming clamped his hands on the girls' mouths and pulled them close to him.
Who are you?
Nottingham asked. A ray of moonlight caught the silver dagger he held in his hand. Charming moved the girls through the room, careful to stay away from any light that might reveal their identities, while also avoiding Nottingham's blade. It wasn't easy. The sheriff was fast and nimble. He lunged forward, slashing the air, and they leaped back.
Whoever you are, you're either brave or stupid, Nottingham seethed. Not many would break into the Queen of Hearts' home. I'll give you credit for being clever, too. Crawling down the chimney was brilliant. I'll have to post a guard on the roof from now on.
Nottingham lunged again. This time, Charming threw a punch that caught the sheriff in the face. While he was recovering from the blow, Charming ushered the girls to another part of the room. Nottingham roared with indignation. Sabrina guessed his pride was hurt more than his face. He leaped at them, swinging his deadly blade in every direction.
The girls stumbled backward, avoiding the sheriff the best they could. Unfortunately, the dagger clipped Charming's arm. There was a tearing sound, and the prince let out a little groan.
"Aha!"
Nottingham cried. He chased Charming around the room, knocking over tables and lamps. Glass crashed to the floor, furniture was overturned, and in the mad, savage assault, the sheriff caught his boot on an upturned rug. He stumbled forward, falling on top of Daphne and knocking her to the ground. Without hesitation, Sabrina leaped on top of him, kicking and punching as she tried to free her little sister. Nottingham, however, seemed undisturbed by Sabrina's attack and held his shiny dagger up to Daphne's face. She cried out, terrified.
"Why, you're just a child," Nottingham said. "Perhaps I should leave you with something to remember me by."
He raised the dagger high over his head, but before its blade could scar Daphne's face, Charming kicked the sheriff in the ribs. The blade flew out of Nottingham's hand and skidded across the floor. As the sheriff clambered to his feet, Charming landed another painful punch to the sheriff's face. Sabrina heard a bone crack, and the villain bellowed in pain, then fell over a chair and hit his head on the floor. After that, he was silent. "That's for Daphne Grimm," Charming said, standing over the fallen villain. "Present and future." Chapter 8.
"Well, we've already changed a number of things about the future," Charming said when Mr. Seven dropped them off outside of Granny Relda's house. "For one, I have my mirror back, and two, Daphne has the magic detector earlier."
"And three, I fought with Nottingham and didn't get a scratch," Daphne said, flashing a smile. "Look at me, I'm still mucho hotto."
"I am sorry to have put you into danger, but..."
"Children, go inside," a voice said from behind them. Sabrina looked up and found Mr. Canis waiting on the porch. "I need to have a word with the prince."
Sabrina could see the anger in the old man's face.
"Mr. Canis, we were..."
"Children, go inside," Canis roared.
Sabrina and Daphne started to do as they were told, but the argument began before they were through the door.
"You had no right to take them from the house," Canis said.
"I got them back safely," Charming argued.
"You dare to stand there and be flippant?" Canis said. "You snuck them out without permission."
"I did what I had to do, Canis."
"And what exactly was that?"
"I can't tell you." Canis seethed. "You're just going to have to trust me," the prince continued.
"Trust you?" Canis said. "Who are you to deserve anyone's trust?"
"That's coming from a man who is slowly turning into a killer," Charming bellowed.
"Listen, mutt! You want something to trust? Then trust this. I will always work in my own interests. And right now, it is in my interest to protect those girls. It is not because I care for them or have deluded myself into believing that I am part of their family, like you. It's because their well-being serves my current interests."
"Take them from this home one more time, and I swear I will kill you," Canis said.
Charming marched up the porch stairs and into the house.
"Do you wish to explain?" Canis asked the girls.
They looked at each other. They had promised not to tell.
"I'm sorry," Daphne said.
"I suspected as much," Canis snapped.
He turned and crossed the lawn, disappearing into the woods. The next morning, Sabrina woke to the loud thumping of people rushing up and down the steps. She shook her sister awake and pulled her out of bed. When they threw open their door, they found Uncle Jake and Mr. Canis moving furniture out of their grandmother's room and down the stairs.
"What's going on?" she said.
"We've got another big day ahead," Granny said as she stepped out of her room. "They're having a yard sale. Get dressed and come down right away. We could use all the hands we can get."
The girls did as they were told and found a crowd gathered on the front lawn, browsing over tables covered with lamps, old books, vases, and assorted knick-knacks. All of the items had little price tags on them.
Granny sat at a rickety card table with a little gray cash box. Uncle Jake met the girls on the front porch, and together they gazed out at nearly all their possessions. It almost made Sabrina cry to see the old woman selling so many things from her past.
"Why is she doing this?"
"We're a little short on the tax bill," her uncle said.
"How short?"
$300,000, he said.
"Does she really think she's going to make that kind of money at a yard sale?" Sabrina asked.
"Desperate times call for desperate measures," Uncle Jake said. For most of the morning, people circulated through the tables, haggling over prices and chatting with neighbors. Granny stayed cheery throughout and never seemed insulted when she was told one of her prized possessions wasn't worth what she was asking for it. She rarely turned down an offer, even if it was ridiculously low.
"Relda, tell me about this sword," a golden-haired man said as he studied a blade.
Sabrina recognized it immediately. It was a gift from Grandpa Basil, and it had hung over her grandmother's bed since the girls had moved in.
"It's a samurai sword from Japan, Sir Kay," Granny explained. "It's Shinto period, a shogun's blade. You can tell from the cherry blossoms carved into the steel.
I think it's easily worth $10,000.
Sir Kay removed the sword from its hilt and examined the blade closely.
"How much are you asking for it?"
"I'll take whatever you can offer."
"I'll give you $100, Sir Kay said.
Granny sighed.
"Sold."
"Granny, no!" Sabrina cried. "You love that sword."
"It's just a sword, Sabrina. And we need the money," Granny replied.
Glinda, the good witch, came over carrying an umbrella stand in the shape of an elephant foot.
"You don't happen to be selling anything enchanted, are you, Relda?"
"I'm afraid not," the old woman said.
"Oh, well, I'll take this," the witch said, somewhat disappointed.
She handed Granny a $10 bill and disappeared into the crowd.
"Mom, you're just giving this stuff away," Uncle Jake complained.
He crossed the lawn, waving an old book in the air.
"This is a very rare copy of the Necronomicon. There's only 4 or 5 of these left in existence, and all you want is $10?
"You and your brother spilled fruit punch on all the pages and then ripped out all the magic spells when you were 9, Granny said. "Its value dropped dramatically."
Uncle Jake frowned and tossed it onto a table, then turned to a crate of old records.
"You're selling my Johnny Cash albums? These are worth more than the Necronomicon."
"Granny, if it would help, I could set up a lemonade stand," Daphne offered.
The old woman pulled the little girl close for a hug.
"A wonderful idea."
"Yeah, if we sell each glass for $30,000, Sabrina said under her breath. "Where's Charming?"
"He's keeping a low profile," Granny said, gesturing back to the house.
Sabrina spotted him peering through the curtains. She nudged her sister so she could see the prince as well. Just then, a police car pulled up and parked along the road. Nottingham stepped out of it and approached the yard. Sabrina could see he had a white bandage over his nose and 2 black eyes.
"Hello, Sheriff," Granny said, trying to sound chipper.
"Selling your trash, are you, Grim?" the sheriff sneered. "I doubt you could give away most of this."
"Well, you know what they say. One person's trash is another person's treasure," the old woman replied.
Nottingham laughed. "You know what else they say? There's a sucker born every minute."
He picked up an African mask Sabrina had seen in her grandmother's bedroom, flipped it over, and dropped it back to the table, as if it were a wad of used tissue.
"Seems as if you've had an accident," Granny said.
Nottingham's lip curled. "Yes, an accident."
"You need to be more careful," Granny said.
"Thank you for your heartfelt advice," Nottingham seethed. "By the way, you wouldn't be selling any full-length mirrors this afternoon, would you?"
Granny smiled and shook her head.
"Not today. Perhaps you'd be interested in a paperweight or a pair of sunglasses. No one would see your eyes."
Nottingham sneered. "Perhaps I should buy a chair. It might be fun to watch your desperate little play, though I know how it's going to end. In foreclosure."
Uncle Jake brought over a high-backed chair and set it down. "This one is $20. Nottingham laughed. He paid Granny Relda and sat down. "Money well spent," he sang. He was grinning like it was his birthday when former deputies Borman and Swinehart arrived. They were two of the three little pigs, former police officers and good friends of the Grimms.
"Hello," Granny said. "Can I interest you in anything? We've got some great bargains here."
Borman and Swinehart nodded and snorted at Nottingham. "How much money have you raised so far, Relda?" Swinehart asked.
"Oh, I think we've gotten $1,000 so far," the old woman said sheepishly.
Sabrina cringed. The sale had been going on for 4 hours, and they weren't even close to raising the full $300,000 tax bill. Borman picked up a letter opener. It had a marble handle and roses engraved in the steel.
"This is beautiful," the portly man said.
"Yes, my husband bought that for me when we made a stop in Paris," Granny said wistfully.
"I'll take it," Borman said. He reached into his pocket and took out an enormous roll of money, then handed it to Granny Relda.
"Mr. Borman, you've given me too much. The letter opener is only $10,
the old woman said. Borman smiled and shook his head.
"I think you're wrong. The price tag says $10,000.
Sabrina was stunned silent, as was nearly everyone else. Everyone but Nottingham, that is. The man was so shocked he nearly fell out of his chair. When it was Swinehart's turn, he selected a set of silver steak knives in an oak box.
"I'll take these," he said, tossing an even bigger wad of cash on the table.
Sabrina noticed the price tag said $25. She guessed Swinehart had paid as much as $25,000.
"Gentlemen," Granny said, "this is much too generous."
"What is the meaning of this?" Nottingham cried.
That's when Briar Rose appeared. Behind her was a group of ever-afters the family had known for years. Mr. Seven, King Arthur, Geppetto. The line went on and on. Each was carrying a huge stack of money.
"You've been good friends to us," Briar said,
then turned to Uncle Jake. "And I can't exactly date a guy who's homeless."
"But this is outrageous," Granny said. "I can't accept this money. You're giving away a small fortune."
"No worries," Mr. Seven said as he approached the table. "We live in Fairyport Landing. What are we going to spend our money on anyway?" The crowd bought every little knick-knack they could for ridiculous sums of money. With each sale, Nottingham seemed to have a new apoplectic fit. He fumed and raged and threatened, but the sales went on. As the girls watched from the porch, they heard a tapping behind them and realized Prince Charming was trying to get their attention. They went inside to meet with him.
"What are you doing? Why aren't you working on the case?" he demanded.
"We're stuck helping out with the yard sale," Sabrina answered. "You know, we're only kids. It's not like we can just hop in a car and drive downtown."
"Not again, at least," Daphne said, reminding her sister of the time they had taken the car for a spin.
"Well, haven't you ever snuck out before? This is the perfect opportunity. Your grandmother is distracted. Take the magic detector and go. If she asks for you, I'll tell her you're upstairs fussing with your hair or playing dolls."
"Is that what you think we do with our free time?" Sabrina said, aghast.
"Just go!"
The girls raced upstairs to retrieve the magic detector and nearly knocked over Puck in the hallway.
"What are you doing hiding up here?" Sabrina asked.
"There's hard work going on outside, and as you know, I'm allergic," he said. "I once carried a box for the old woman and nearly had to be hospitalized. Why aren't you two helping?"
We're just going to our room," Sabrina stammered.
"Do you smell that?" Puck asked.
"Smell what?" Daphne said.
"A lie. I smell a lie, and it's stinky. What are you two up to?"
Sabrina knew the fairy would never give up, so she dragged him into her bedroom with her sister in tow.
"We're investigating the stolen magical items on our own," Sabrina said.
"And you don't want the old lady or Canis to find out? That's incredibly sneaky and dishonest.
The girls nodded with shame. "I'm in," Puck said. "We can crawl out of your bedroom window, and I'll fly you wherever you want."
"You want to change your pants first," Daphne said.
Puck glanced down at his filthy jeans.
"No. Why?"
"They don't fit you anymore."
Sabrina studied the boy's pants. Normally the cuffs dragged on the ground and into whatever Puck stomped through, but now they were several inches above his ankles.
"They must have shrunk in the wash," Puck said.
"Since when do you wash your clothes?"
Puck shrugged.
"Are we going to do this or not?"
Daphne grabbed the little black ball that detected magic from the bureau and slipped it into her pocket. Then she joined Sabrina and Puck at the window. They opened it, and Puck leaped out. A second later, his wings were flapping, and he was hovering outside. He reached out his hand for Sabrina's. She eyed it as if it were something she didn't understand, like algebra or diagramming sentences. She snatched it quickly before the boy threw a fit, though she caught her sister's grin out of the corner of her eye. Before she had seen their future together, Sabrina wouldn't have thought twice about holding the boy's hand, except to remember to wash later with generous amounts of antibacterial soap and a wire brush. But now even something so simple seemed to have so many complicated layers to it.
"Don't you say a word," Sabrina grumbled to her sister.
In no time, the trio was sailing above the treetops out of sight of their family and friends on the front lawn. Once they were over Main Street, Daphne began to shimmer and vibrate.
"I'm picking up something," she said.
"Remember what Charming said," Sabrina replied. "Concentrate on what we're looking for. Think about the clock and the wand and the water." Daphne agreed and closed her eyes tightly.
"I can't explain why, but I feel like we should head toward the river."
Puck dropped them off out of sight of the human townspeople, which was harder than it sounded. The streets were quite crowded with people trying to sell their jewelry and watches. It was Friday, the last day to pay the taxes. People were desperate. The children walked down the road as Daphne described the sensation she got from the magic detector. As they continued, the feeling got stronger, which was good, but Daphne was visibly, violently shaking, which was bad. Sabrina was sure someone would notice eventually. They walked down to the end of the street, where Ms. Rose's coffee shop, the radio station, and a few other businesses sat. There, the vibration was stronger than ever.
"Are you okay?" Puck asked, as he watched the little girl turn into a blur.
"I feel funky," Daphne said.
Her voice sounded like she was talking through an electric fan.
"I have a feeling we're really close. It's hard to pinpoint exactly where they are, though. I think I need more practice."
Suddenly, the vibration stopped.
"I need a break," the little girl continued. "I think I might Ralph."
They stopped outside of Sacred Grounds and spotted Briar Rose through the window. She was sitting with several women, showing them the coffee mug she had purchased at Granny's yard sale. Next to her at the table were Ms. White, Dr. Cindy, and another woman with long, flowing red hair whom the girls had never seen before. They were all trying to console Ms. White, who was in tears.
"Charming is a jerk," Daphne said, as she looked through the window. "He's broken her heart. He should at least call her."
"I think he's trying to protect her," Sabrina said.
"Let's go in and try to cheer her up."
"We're wasting time," Sabrina said. "We need to keep looking for the stolen items."
"I don't care," Daphne declared. "Miss White is my friend."
"Fine with me," Puck chimed in. "I'm starving. I'm getting in line for a muffin."
The children entered the coffee shop, and the girls crossed the room to greet the four women.
"Hello," Daphne said, grinning from ear to ear. "Hello, girls," Briar Rose replied. "Taking a break from the big sale?"
The girls nodded.
"What's wrong, Ms. White?" Daphne asked.
"Snow is having a difficult day," Cindy said.
"I'm just worried about Billy," the teacher said with a sniffle.
Sabrina and Daphne shared a look.
"I'm sure he's fine," Sabrina said.
"That's what I've been telling her," the fourth woman said.
Her red hair framed her creamy complexion and green eyes.
To Sabrina, she looked like a glamorous star from an old black-and-white movie. She reached over and shook Sabrina's hand. "You must be Henry's girls. I'm Rapunzel." Daphne let out a squeal. "She does that for everyone?" Cindy asked with a laugh. "I thought I was special." "We're trying to cheer up Snow," Rapunzel said. "William doesn't deserve your tears, girlfriend." "She's right, Snow," Briar Rose said. "Whenever his pride is hurt, he runs off. Hunting, he used to call it, but I knew better. He was sulking. Losing the election hurt his fragile ego." "And William does have his childish moments," Cindy added. "I was married to the man for nearly 100 years. He'd throw his tantrums, disappear, and then show up without any explanation. He'll be back."
"But I can't believe he wouldn't call, right? Leave me some way of knowing he was okay," Ms. White sobbed.
Rapunzel sighed. "You thought you were different." Snow wiped her eyes.
"What?"
"You thought you were different from us," the red-haired beauty repeated. "You thought that because you two had found one another after 500 years, that your love was special. I thought the same thing. All the magic that surrounded my love affair with William, both emotionally and literally. I mean, that's why they call our stories fairy tales, right? Love and magic and riding off into the sunset together."
"Rapunzel, you've got this all wrong," Ms. White replied. "I didn't think I was special."
"The thing is," Cindy said, "you are special." Rapunzel and Briar Rose shifted uncomfortably.
"I knew it. We all knew it," Cindy continued. "We're all amazing women, beautiful, smart, capable, but we weren't Snow White."
"Cindy." But the blonde beauty stopped Ms. White. "This isn't out of anger, Snow. I'm over that, but I'm a person that understands relationships. I had a family that was completely nuts, and I was married to a guy who was more boy than man. I know the truth when it's looking me in the face. He never got over you, and that's why I left him. William has always loved you. Not that he didn't love Briar or Rapunzel or me. I believe he tried to be a good husband to each of us, but his heart was always yours. You were the first woman in his life, and when you left him at the altar, he never recovered."
"We were too young. It was all happening so fast," Ms. White explained.
"I wish I had been that smart," Rapunzel said. Briar Rose nodded in agreement. Cindy reached over and took Ms. White's hand. "For a long time I resented you, Snow, because I was always competing with you. Your spirit hung over our home like a ghost. Occasionally we would be at a party and hear about something that was going on in your life, and his eyes would fix on whoever was saying it. For days he would be distant, distracted. He'd spend a week at the stables claiming the horses needed attention. But I wasn't stupid."
"Is this true?" Ms. White said, looking at the other women in the group.
They all nodded.
"I'm sorry." "Snow, I don't think Cindy is chastising you," Rapunzel said.
"No, in fact, Snow, since I've come to know you, I adore you, and I don't regret anything. My Tom is all the prince I will ever need. What I'm trying to say to you is that William's love for you is different. It is troubling that he hasn't tried to contact you."
"There goes Dr. Cindy," Rapunzel said. "Could you turn off the honesty you give your callers and remember we're trying to cheer this woman up?"
Snow White laughed, and the others joined her.
"Ms. White, I know he loves you," Daphne said. "He's going to pop up any day now."
"I hope you're right," Ms. White said.
"Well, when he does, I hope you give him a karate kick to the behind," Briar Rose said, which caused the four women to burst into laughter again.
"Briar, I swear, you don't say much, but when you do, it's hilarious," Rapunzel said.
"Girls, I've got an idea, and you can tell me I'm nuts and say forget it, but how about we make this a regular thing?"
The women glanced at one another hesitantly.
"Come on," Rapunzel cried. "We've been avoiding each other in this silly little town for 200 years. Let's put it all behind us, meet for brunch, start a book club, gossip. Let's be friends."
"I don't know,"
Cindy said hesitantly.
What if we played poker?
Briar Rose suggested. I'm in, Ms. White said quickly. Dr. Cindy threw up her arms in surrender. How are Tuesday nights?
Can I come?
Daphne asked. The table roared with laughter.
Of course you can come, Ms. White said.
So that settles it, Rapunzel replied. Tuesday nights at my place. You bring the wine, and I'll make something decadent that we shouldn't eat. We'll call ourselves the Poker Princesses. The women nodded enthusiastically, and even Sabrina joined in. Puck came over with a sack of muffins.
What's all the commotion?
And no boys, Rapunzel cried, and the Poker Princesses applauded. Puck grumbled and stormed out of the coffee shop. Sabrina grabbed her sister, said their goodbyes, and chased after the fairy.
We've got to get back, Sabrina said as they left. Granny is going to miss us.
Oddly, Granny hadn't missed them. There had been a run at the yard sale, and nearly three-quarters of the items were sold. When the children landed in the backyard and circled the house to check in with the sale, they found their grandmother counting a huge stack of bills. Puck rushed up to his room for fear of being drafted into helping put things away.
Oh, hello, girls, Granny said. As they say in the business world, we made a killing.
Enough to pay the taxes? Daphne asked.
Granny Relda nodded.
Enough to put us over the top, I think. If you'll help Mr. Canis bring what's left back into the house, we can go down and pay the bill. It will be nice to have this off my shoulders.
The children carried the rest of the things back inside and put them in their original places. When everything was settled, the house seemed emptier. Paintings were gone, as was the overstuffed chair in the living room. Most of the rugs and kitchen utensils had been sold, including the toaster and the coffee pot. Daphne was heartbroken when she discovered Granny had sold the ice cream scoop. Suddenly, Charming's full-length mirror, which he had leaned on the wall of the living room, began to warp and shimmer. The prince stepped through the reflection and into the room. He sported a fresh shave and haircut, and he had swapped Uncle Jake's jeans for a stylish, clean suit. Apparently, the Hotel of Wonders lived up to its reputation as a full-service resort.
Swanky, Daphne said.
Perhaps later you'll give me a tour of your mirror, Granny Relda said. I've never been inside any but our own.
Charming nodded.
Perhaps. Well, I suppose I should go and fetch Mr. Canis and Jacob, Granny said, as she hurried upstairs. We've got the tax money. Oh, I do so hope that it ruins Maya Hart's day.
When she was gone, the children turned to Charming.
What did you find? He asked.
Whoever has the stolen items has got them stashed somewhere near the river. We were picking up big vibes down by Sacred Grounds and the radio station.
Mucho hugo vibes,
Daphne added, and then her tone turned angry.
We also saw Ms. White.
How is she? Charming asked.
Heartbroken.
Charming lowered his eyes.
She's a mess, Sabrina said.
You should send her a note, anything, just to let her know you are okay. She thinks you're dead.
I can't, he said.
But stop! My decision is final,
Charming shouted. I know you don't understand. I can't expect you to. It's not easy to know she is hurt and that it is my fault, but you should know that I would do anything for her. Anything!
Fine,
Sabrina said, throwing her hands up. Daphne frowned but didn't argue. Granny returned with Mr. Canis and Uncle Jake. The old man looked at Charming with distaste.
Girls, how would you like to see the mayor's head pop off? Granny asked.
Want to come with us to the tax office?
I wouldn't miss that for the world,
Sabrina smiled. Uncle Jake reached into his pocket and took out a camera.
I'm taking pictures.
William, since you are in hiding, would you mind looking after the house while we're gone?
The old woman asked.
Do you think it is wise to leave him here alone?
Canis demanded, before Charming could answer. Granny flushed.
Mr. Canis!
You think I'm going to rob you blind? Charming asked.
I think you might try, Canis said, hovering close to Charming's face. "Gentlemen, that's enough," Granny shouted.
Canis nodded reluctantly and stormed outside. Sabrina could hear him slam the car door, and then the family's ancient car engine roared to life, spitting and knocking violently. When everyone got into the car, Canis threw the old jalopy into reverse and whipped out into the street. When he put it into drive, the engine screamed like a cat in a bathtub. Canis ignored its protests and pounded his foot onto the accelerator.
"That was entirely uncalled for," Granny shouted over the noise.
"Having him in the house is entirely uncalled for," Canis yelled back.
Sabrina and Daphne were shocked. Even when they'd fought the last few days, the girls had never heard Mr. Canis raise his voice at their grandmother. In a world filled with people the old man couldn't stand, Granny Relda had always had his utmost respect.
"I know that the two of you have had your history," Granny said, "but the man is homeless."
"That man deserves no better than to be homeless."
"It is not in my habit to turn away a person in need," Granny said.
"Then you are a fool," Canis declared.
"Was I a fool when I took you in?" Granny shouted back. "When even my husband told me you were untrustworthy, I turned a deaf ear, and you have become the dearest friend I have and my most trusted companion."
Canis was silent but steaming.
"I'm sorry about the angry words," Granny said
when the family finally reached the courthouse.
"Let's try to forget them. Today is a happy day."
Canis grunted and looked out of the window.
"I'll wait here."
The crowd of protesters from the day before was gone. Only a few stragglers remained, and they looked even more desperate. This time they showed no resistance to letting the family pass. Granny, Uncle Jake, and the girls climbed the steps and went inside. The security guard they had met the day before was standing in the same spot. He seemed surprised to see the family. They waved to him and continued down the hallway to the tax office. Once inside, Granny rang the bell for service.
"I really can't wait to see her face," Granny said softly.
It wasn't long before Mayor Hart came around the corner. She spotted the family and gasped.
"What are you doing here?"
"We've come to pay our taxes, of course,"
Granny said, setting a bag of money on the countertop. The woman snatched her megaphone and raised it to her crooked mouth.
"That's not possible! Nottingham!"
she shouted, then slammed the device down on the countertop so hard, Sabrina thought it might break.
"Someone's having a bad day," Daphne said with a grin.
Seconds later, Sheriff Nottingham hobbled into the room.
"What is it, woman? Don't you know I have my hands full? The phone is ringing off the hook. Apparently some fool in a Civil War uniform is over on Appleby's farm firing a musket."
"The Grimms have come to pay their taxes again,"
Hart said, pointing an angry finger at the family. The sheriff nodded, but his face was dark and angry.
"I know."
"It's all there, Sheriff, and like before, I'm going to need a receipt,"
Granny Relda said.
"You're enjoying this," Hart shouted.
"What, paying taxes? I doubt there are too many people who enjoy it," Granny said.
"Well, you can come in here with $1 million next time, and it won't change the inevitable. I want you out of this town, Relda Grimm. You and your filthy brood. I want every human being out of Ferryport Landing, and what I want, I get."
Suddenly, the door flew open, and one of the playing card soldiers raced inside.
"Sheriff, we've got a situation," he yelled.
"Calm yourself down, you idiot."
"There's a ship coming up the river," the soldier said. "I just heard about it on my radio. The witnesses say it's pretty old."
"So what?" Nottingham said. "Ships come up and down the river every day."
"This one has cannons mounted on it," the guard said.
"Cannons?" Granny repeated.
Just then the walkie-talkie strapped to the guard's waist squawked, and a voice came on.
Seven of clubs, you're not going to believe this ship. There must be 1,000 people on it, and they're all dressed like they're going to a costume party. Plus, you gotta see this storm. It just came out of nowhere. Wait a minute. I think the boat has a name painted on the side. It looks German.
Neuer Anfang.
New beginning, Granny translated.
It can't be, Mayor Hart shouted.
Nottingham leaped over the counter that divided the room and pushed through the family as he raced out the door. Mayor Hart was hot on his heels.
What? Sabrina cried. What's the big deal about this ship?
Uncle Jake shook his head in disbelief.
It's impossible. It can't be the new beginning.
Mr. Canis was already out of the car and hurrying to join them when they exited the courthouse.
You've heard?
Granny nodded.
It must be some kind of prank.
It's not, Canis said. I can smell the boat. I'll never forget that smell.
The family raced down the street as fast as they could. By the time they reached the tiny marina, Granny Relda was out of breath, and there was a huge crowd of people looking out on the river. The Grimms weaved through the mob until they got to the front. There it was, a massive sailing ship with several white flags fluttering in the cool spring breeze. Even from the shore, Sabrina could see a crowd on board staring back at them. A tiny rowboat was already cruising toward the shore, with a lone man at the oars.
Who is it? Daphne wondered, looking across the river.
Granny reached into her huge handbag and took out a pair of binoculars.
Oh, dear, she said, when she peered through the lenses.
What? Who is it? Sabrina asked, and Granny handed her the binoculars. She adjusted them and looked out toward the ship. The deck was filled with princes, princesses, witches, ogres, dwarves, oddly dressed people, and numerous hairy and feathered creatures. She searched the water for the rowboat. A man with brown hair and a rather large nose was approaching the shore. He seemed oddly familiar, as if she had seen a picture of him before, or maybe a drawing. Then it dawned on her who it was.
Children, that's your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. That's Wilhelm Grimm, Granny said.
Chapter 9. Sabrina glanced at the sky. A swirling black storm, another tear in time, was rapidly vanishing from above the river. The little rowboat drifted to the shore, and Wilhelm leaped out. He was shorter than Sabrina expected. He was wearing a long brown coat and a wide-brimmed hat. His eyes were almost black and quite small. He turned and gazed at the crowd with awe and wonder.
"Ist das Amerika?" Wilhelm asked.
"Ja, das ist Amerika. Willkommen, Wilhelm. Willkommen," Granny said. "What did you just say?" Daphne asked.
"I just welcomed him to America," Granny said,
then turned back to Wilhelm.
"Do you speak English?"
"Ja, a little," Wilhelm said. "Is this New York?"
Granny nodded. Wilhelm studied the crowd. He spotted Briar Rose on the shore and rushed to her. Confused and excited, he took her hand, then looked back at his ship.
"Wie sind Sie hierher gekommen? Waren Sie auf dem Schiff?" he asked.
"What is he saying?" Ms. Rose asked.
"He's confused," Granny explained.
"How can you be here?"
Wilhelm turned and pointed at the ship.
"And there."
Before anyone could explain, Nottingham pulled handcuffs from his jacket and clamped them around Wilhelm's wrists.
"Ask him if he understands he's under arrest."
Nottingham led Wilhelm from the marina toward the town jail. Granny was at the head of a crowd demanding the man's release, while also doing her best to explain what was happening to the family's bewildered ancestor. As she left, Granny instructed Sabrina and Daphne to stay with Mr. Canis and to help make sure that no one else rowed from the new beginning to shore or from the marina to the ship.
"I'm on that boat," Briar Rose said, as Uncle Jake took her hand. I mean, I was on that boat. I mean, I don't know what I mean.
How did this happen? Mr. Seven asked, pushing his way through the crowd.
Sabrina and Daphne looked at each other. They knew exactly how it happened. They just didn't know who or what was causing it. Apparently, their conspiratorial look wasn't lost on Mr. Canis. He snatched them both by the arm and dragged them out of earshot of the crowd.
"You know something," he said.
Sabrina did her best to play innocent. She glanced over at Daphne, who was whipping her head around, trying to avoid the old man's eyes.
"I don't know what you're talking about," Sabrina mumbled. "Child, this is no time for lies," Canis growled.
"We promised Mr. Charming that we wouldn't say anything," Daphne blurted out. Sabrina scowled. Daphne was just no good at lying. Canis bristled.
"I should have known he had something to do with this."
"You've got it wrong, Mr. Canis," Sabrina said, throwing her hands up in surrender. "He's trying to help."
"Help who?"
"It's going to sound crazy."
"Try me," the hulking man said.
Sabrina looked up into his face. She saw his wolfen features clearer every day and realized he might actually understand.
"It's a tear in time," Sabrina said.
"It's been happening all over town, but this is the biggest incident yet."
"A tear in what?"
"In time. Things are slipping out of the future and the past."
"And how do you know this?"
"Because we slipped through one ourselves," Daphne said. "Yesterday, when you took us out into the forest, we didn't get lost. We got sent to the future."
"We went 15 years ahead," Sabrina added. "How does Charming have anything to do with this?" Canis asked impatiently.
"He was stuck there, too. He'd been pulled into one of these tears right after the election," Daphne said. "He had been trying to find a way back for months."
"Why didn't you tell anyone?" Canis asked.
"Charming made us promise to keep it to ourselves. We know things about the future. He thinks that we should keep them a secret so we can change things without anyone getting in the way."
"What is so bad about the future that needs to be changed?" Canis asked.
A tear rolled down Daphne's cheek.
"You weren't in the future. The wolf was."
Canis looked shaken, but controlled himself.
"We're going to change as much as we can," Sabrina said. "You can't tell anyone, not even Granny." "How do we stop these time tears?" Canis asked.
"We don't know," Daphne said. "We've got something that helps us find them, but I'm not very good at using it yet."
"We think that all those stolen magical items we've been investigating are being used together, and they're causing the tears,"
Sabrina explained as best she could.
"We know that in the future, we never found the missing items. If we can locate them, we might be able to fix the tears and change the future at the same time."
Just then, an enormous fiery explosion smacked into the beach, sending rock and sand in all directions. When Sabrina searched for the source of the attack, she noticed that one of the cannons on the ship had smoke coming out of it.
"They're firing on us," Sabrina exclaimed. "Of course, we just arrested their captain," Canis said, rushing back to the dock. "Those aren't pebbles they're throwing at you people. Get back!"
Another blast rocked the beach.
"Are we going to stand here and let them fire on us?"
King Arthur shouted as he stepped through the crowd.
"Shouldn't we fire back?"
"Not if you don't want to wipe out your own existence," a saggy-jowled man said from the crowd.
Sabrina thought at first that he was just an old man, but then she realized his wrinkled skin wasn't skin at all, but an old burlap sack. He had straw sticking out of his cuffs, and he wore an old farmer's hat on his head.
"What are you talking about, Scarecrow?" Mr. Seven shouted.
"That ship has clearly sailed here from the past. How and why, I can't say. But I do know one thing. Many of us are on that ship. Arthur, you're on that boat. But it's you from 200 years ago. If you attack that ship, you could accidentally kill yourself."
"Scarecrow,
I never can make heads or tails of anything you say," one of the three blind mice complained. "You sure the wizard gave you brains? I got a feeling he stuffed your head with cotton candy."
"Oh, if you only had a brain," the Scarecrow replied.
Canis stared at the Scarecrow.
"So, are you saying that if someone from that ship was killed, it could change the present?"
The Scarecrow nodded.
"Absolutely."
In a flash, Canis had the girls in his arms and was running up the street.
"What are you doing?" Sabrina yelled.
"Nottingham's got Wilhelm," he shouted. "If he knows what the Scarecrow knows, he will kill him."
"Why would he do that?" Sabrina asked.
"Because if Wilhelm were to die, then the barrier that traps us in this town would never have been created," Canis said. "And killing him would put an end to his descendants. Every member of your family could suddenly cease to exist."
"Fudge," Daphne whispered. Sabrina looked back at the crowd by the river. As she watched, many of the bystanders started chasing after them. It seemed that they had realized the dark opportunity Canis had just explained.
Could you run a little faster?" she said.
The jailhouse was a mob scene. There were hundreds of ever-afters outside demanding answers. Canis set the girls on his huge shoulders and tossed people aside as he pushed his way into the tiny building. They found Granny at the front desk, pounding on the table and calling out for the sheriff.
"Where is he?" Canis said, setting the girls down.
"Nottingham has taken him back to a cell for interrogation," she said.
"I worry about how he defines the word interrogation," Canis said. "We have to get him out of there."
Granny nodded. Then the sheriff stepped back into the office. He had a grin on his face like he had just gotten a bicycle for his birthday.
"Sheriff Nottingham," Granny exclaimed, "you had no right to arrest that man."
"I have every right. I'm the sheriff," he said.
"What is his crime?"
"Let's see. He doesn't have a sailing license or a passport, and he's trying to sneak foreigners into the country."
"He doesn't belong here, Nottingham," Canis said.
Sabrina and Daphne both tugged on his sleeves, hoping to remind him that it wasn't wise to tell what he knew about the time tears.
"Oh, I'm well aware he doesn't belong here," Nottingham said. "He's come here from the past. Now that I see it with my own eyes, I almost feel like apologizing for ignoring all the reports I've been getting from citizens.
The phone has been ringing off the hook for days about the Lenni Lenape Indian tribe, dinosaurs, Civil War soldiers, spacemen. Still, none of them really deserved my attention until today. It seems as if the past has opened up and delivered us a gift."
"Gift? What are you talking about?" Granny demanded.
"Why, with one slash of my dagger, I can end the suffering of this entire town," Nottingham replied. "If I am not mistaken, the man back in that cell is Wilhelm Grimm. Killing him gives us our freedom."
"You can't just kill a man," Sabrina said. "You're a police officer."
"Police officer?" Nottingham laughed. "Child, do you think I took this job because I care about justice? Your precious Wilhelm is being put to death for crimes against ever-afters. If my theory is correct, when he expires, your wretched family will vanish just like that."
He snapped his fingers so loudly that Daphne jumped in fright.
"I wonder if I'll remember you when it's all said and done."
"It would be a shame if I didn't."
"When do you plan to do this?" Granny Relda asked.
"Midnight tonight,"
a voice shouted through a megaphone. The crowd separated, and Mayor Hart stepped front and center.
"Tonight, I make good on my campaign promise of changing everything. I bet you didn't guess just how much change I had planned. It's going to be quite a celebration, folks. Everyone is invited."
Nottingham let out a wicked laugh as he glared at the Grimm family.
"Aren't you going to tell us we'll never get away with this?"
The crowd roared with laughter.
"I thought it was understood," Granny Relda said calmly.
The family pushed their way through the mob and out into the street.
Uncle Jake was waiting by the car when they arrived.
"Is he in there?" he asked, pointing back toward the jail.
Granny nodded.
"Heaven only knows how he got here."
Sabrina and Daphne shared a look, but kept quiet.
"What are we going to do?" Sabrina asked.
"Yeah, I don't want to not exist. I've got plans," Daphne added.
"We're going to do what every Grimm has done in times of trouble. They're going to work together as a family. Mr. Canis, take us home. We have to rally the troops."
"You want to what?" Uncle Jake said, leaping from his seat on the family couch.
"I want you to tell Baba Yaga that Nottingham has her wand and lead her to the police station," Granny said.
Charming, Canis, Sabrina, Daphne, Puck, and even Elvis seemed shocked by Granny's plan. They gazed at one another in disbelief.
"What in heaven for?" Uncle Jake asked.
"They're going to need her as a distraction," the old woman explained. "If she can cause enough of a ruckus, Nottingham won't hear Mr. Canis knocking down the back wall so we can break Wilhelm out of his cell."
Puck clapped his hands.
"A jailbreak! I love it!"
Uncle Jake, however, stood shaking his head. "Mom, mutual trust is the only thing keeping Baba Yaga from adding all of us to her bone fence. If you lie to her, things will get ugly."
"Things are ugly," Mr. Canis said. "Desperate times, son."
"I know the consequences," the old woman said, "but the alternative is much worse."
"Personally, I think your job sounds a lot more fun than mine," Puck complained to Uncle Jake.
"I'm sorry you feel that way, Puck," Granny said, "but your task is the most important."
"What about us?"
Daphne said, as she rubbed Elvis's chin. The big dog watched Granny Relda attentively, as if waiting to find out what his role in the plan would be.
"You girls are going to stay with me. I may need your help getting Wilhelm to safety," Granny said.
"But there's a hole in your plan, General," Charming said.
"General?"
Granny Relda said. The girls and Charming shared a look.
"I mean, what are you going to do with Wilhelm when you get him? You won't be able to hide him here. Nottingham is going to know who was responsible."
Granny shook her head.
"I don't know. All I do know is that if we don't rescue him, the Queen is going to kill him, and then my family is going to cease to exist. Now, I suspect it will take Jacob a couple of hours to find Baba Yaga and lure her into town. I suggest you all have something to eat and get some rest. This is probably going to be a long night."
After everyone had eaten what they could, Granny retired to her bedroom and Puck went to his. Uncle Jake went off in search of Baba Yaga, and Charming retreated into his mirror, leaving Mr. Canis and the girls alone. The old man sat quietly, studying the girls. His face looked as if he were wrestling with a question. Sabrina knew what it would be, and dreaded having to answer it. How do you tell someone he is going to be taken over by a monster and lose his soul?
"Can I do anything to stop it?" Mr. Canis asked finally, looking down at the sharp black talons on his hand.
"Yes," Daphne said.
Sabrina, on the other hand, wasn't so sure.